So it's my honor this evening to introduce to you members of the new faculty of the College of Arts and Sciences. But before I do that, some people often ask me, what's the most exciting part of being the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of St. Thomas? And I would say, without question, it is working with the finest faculty in the country. If you are a member of the College of Arts and Sciences faculty, please stand and be recognized this evening for your excellence. Thank you very much. It's one of those things that you can take for granted because we often measure the role of faculty in terms of their research and their teaching. We often measure faculty in terms of their research and teaching, but sometimes we forget to measure them in terms of their heart. And one of the things that you'll discover very quickly at the University of St. Thomas is that this is a faculty that's driven by the heart. You see that in the work that they do with students. You see it in the way that they communicate the value proposition of this institution. You see it in their deep commitment to the mission and values of the University of St. Thomas. I can only point you to those phenomenal SOLVE projects and the faculty members who work with those young people as an example of what drives the driving engine of this institution, which is our faculty and their deep commitment to student engagement. So again, thank you. I also want to recognize this evening a person who needs no introduction, but I will say this. Some people wonder what it's like to work for a visionary. I don't wonder because I work for a visionary, and that's Dr. Julie Sullivan. There is no better leader of an academic institution in the United States. When you talk about a deep commitment to values, when you talk about a deep commitment to student learning, when you talk about an aspirational goal to see us rise to be the preeminent, not just Midwestern university, but the preeminent Catholic university in the United States, then you have to recognize and applaud the vision and the passion of Dr. Julie Sullivan. Dr. Sullivan, please stand and be recognized. It's also my pleasure this evening to introduce to you the new members of the faculty of the College of Arts and Sciences. And I wish you'd all say it with me, because we are, say it with me, the College of Arts and Sciences. Ohio State tried to trademark it, it didn't work. Now belongs to us, so we are the college. Last year I told you that the College of Arts and Sciences was rising. This year, that's evident in some of the new hires who will join our faculty to help educate our students for the future. Please join me in welcoming first from the Department of Biology, Dr. Eric Chapman. Dr. Chapman, please stand if you're here. From the Department of Chemistry, Dr. Adam Dittmer. From the Center for Irish Studies, Dr. David Gardner. From the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice, Dr. Richard Greenleaf. From the Department of Computer and Information Sciences, Dr. Ryan Hart. From the Department of History, Dr. Stephen Hausman. From the Department of Aerospace Studies, Major Mitchell Johnson. From the coolest department on campus, the Department of Psychology, Dr. Angela Kurth. From the Department of Biology, Dr. Rahman Manzoor. From the Department of Music, Dr. Burt. Burt, I am going to butcher your last name, sir. Thanks. Bert is very good. From the Department of Health and Exercise Science, Ms. Amber Roy. From the Department of Economics, Dr. Andrea Sorensen. And from the Department of Modern and Classical Languages, Dr. Beatrice Variallo. I'm also pleased to announce this evening that the College of Arts and Sciences, last year we announced our SOLVE initiative, and that was exciting. This year, I am pleased to announce our newest initiative through SOLVE, and that will be the introduction to the University of St. Thomas of Ready to Run, a national network of nonpartisan campaign training programs committed to electing more women to public office. We are the only, thank you. We are the only Ready to Run program in Minnesota, and we'll be holding our first campaign training for women candidates in May of 2020. Ready to Run is part of the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University, which is nationally recognized as a leading source of scholarly research and current data about American women's political participation. The core of its mission is to promote women's leadership. Research shows that women make government more transparent, inclusive, and accessible, and women bring different policy priorities and life experiences to political decision-making. Electing more women to office changes the way government works, and their voices are needed at all levels of government, across Minnesota and in Washington, D.C. I'm pleased to announce this evening that heading up that initiative for the College of Arts and Sciences will be Dr. Angela High Pippert. Professor, thank you. Now, to get us started this evening the right way, I have to introduce these young ladies who have the voices of angels. They are phenomenal performers, incredible singers, and they all have high GPAs. Please welcome Cadenza.
Don't try to explain your mind, I know what's happening here. One minute it's love and suddenly it's like a battlefield. One word turns into a war, why is it the smallest things that tear us down? My world's nothing when you don't, I'm out here without a shield. Can't go back now, both hands tied behind my back to nothing. These times, but we climb so fast to fall again. Why we gotta fall for it now? I never meant to start a war. You know I never wanna hurt you. Don't even know what we're fighting for. Why does love always feel like a battlefield? A battlefield, a battlefield. Why does love always feel like a battlefield? A battlefield, a battlefield. I guess you better go and get your armor. Get your armor, get your armor. I guess you better go and get your armor. Get your armor, get your armor. I guess you better go and get your. We could pretend that we aren't friends tonight, oh. And in the morning we'll wake up and we'll be alright. Cause baby we don't have to fight. And I don't want this love to feel like a battlefield. A battlefield, a battlefield. Why does love always feel like a battlefield? A battlefield, a battlefield. I guess you better go and get your armor. I never meant to start a war. You know I never wanna hurt you. Don't even know what we're fighting for. Why does love always feel like a battlefield? A battlefield, a battlefield. Why does love always feel like a battlefield? A battlefield, a battlefield. I guess you better go and get your armor. Yeah, I guess you better go and get your armor. Get your armor, get your armor. Why does love always feel like? Whoa, what does love always feel like? Whoa, what does love always feel like? I never meant to start a war. Don't even know what we're fighting for. I never meant to start a war. Don't even know what we're fighting for. I never meant to start a war. You know I never wanna hurt you.
I just wanted to thank you for having us here today, and we just got some new members, so I want to invite them on stage to perform our second piece for you.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain. I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep. Nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. And I could easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. Take my man, Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. Oh, please don't take him even though you can. Oh, please don't take him even though you can.
Thank you.
Those students can sing. That's all I can say. Weren't they amazing? Kind of fitting to begin with Cadenza because it reminds us at the core what this is really all supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about our students and how we empower our students, how we think about helping prepare them for the future, how we prepare them to live the mission and values of our institution. And in that regard, I think it's important to note that we have partners that extend beyond the faculty and reside in areas like residence life and academic affairs. If you are here from the athletics department, if you are here from student affairs, if you are the critical care partners who help to make up those who help to cocoon our students and provide this special experience for them, please know that you are valued and the College of Arts and Sciences is deeply indebted to the role that you play in the formation of these young people. From the Office of Mission, to student affairs, to athletics. It is a team effort, and we recognize that you are a critical part of that team. Also, I want to acknowledge the students that are here tonight. Students, please stand and be recognized. It's all about you. I also want to acknowledge the CAS Advisory Board. I am not going to read their names out this evening just because we're slightly behind schedule, but believe me when I tell you that I am blessed to work with a board of advisors who really understand the importance of us thinking externally about what we can bring to the community, but also the ways in which the community can help transform us. They come from all different areas of industry, of government service, of banking and finance, of design, and yet what they share in common with us is this, for lack of a better term, connection to the DNA of this institution. And I use DNA as an acronym. I use it to designate our dreams, how we nurture those dreams, and ultimately how we act upon those dreams when we see that our values are in question. We see this in the sustainability work done by our faculty in the Department of Biology, Earth Science, and Environment. We see this in the work of our faculty who are engaged in art history, and in psychology, and in health and exercise science, and in English, and in modern and classical languages, and in theology, and in philosophy, and in Catholic studies. In short, we see it across the College of Arts and Sciences. And we recognize that and celebrate that, but we also celebrate the men and women who give so freely of art their time to help us realize that vision. Members of the CAS Board of Advisors, please stand to be recognized for your service to the College of Arts and Sciences. I also very quickly have to acknowledge our community partners. I'm not going to be able to call them all out tonight, but I did see Pat Exner here. Pat, please stand. I did see Jeb Myers from Cristo Rey. Please stand. I did see some members of the YWCA. I did see Pahua Hoffman, who's also on our board, but also one of our community partners. Please stand. Ruben Moore, who's on our board, but also one of our community partners. Please stand. We could not do this work without you, so thank you. Last but not least this evening, it is my distinct honor to introduce our speaker. John Ozzie Nelson is something else. That's what my mom used to say about me back in the day when I did something that was extraordinary, which didn't happen often because generally the extraordinary was couched in terms of the naughty. But when it was extraordinary, it was a good thing, she would say, you're something else. John Ozzie Nelson is chairman and CEO of Nelson, a design, architecture, branding, and consulting service organization operating across the country and the globe. Under Ozzie's direction, the firm expanded from a one-office traditional design firm with a single core competency to its current state of 22 locations, 10 different practice areas, and multiple fully integrated service lines. Since Ozzie became CEO of Nelson, the firm has executed 28 merger acquisitions, taking Nelson from the rank of 37 in the industry to the top 10, with a growth of more than 500%. In 2019, he was named one of Minneapolis-St. Paul's Business Journal's most admired CEOs. Jen Snyder and I, along with Eric Thurman, had an opportunity to attend a dinner last week in which Ozzie received that honor. And I want to tell you something about Tommy's. I want to tell you something special about Tommy's. Because whenever the spotlight is on Tommy's, they find a way to deflect it and to celebrate those who have helped them get to that space. It was a moment where Ozzie could have been very selfish and talked about his rise to the top, talked about the fact that with 1,100 employees, it's his vision and stewardship that ultimately are the success of that company. And yet, that's not what he talked about. He spent the time talking about all the people who helped Nelson really reach that pinnacle, that deep investment in his employees, that deep investment in his partners. And then he spent some time talking about his lovely wife. I gotta tell you, there's something special about Tommy's, something special about this place, something special about us. Sometimes we need to pause and celebrate those things and acknowledging that we form young men and young women who grow up to transform the world. I've seen Ozzie do that in both practical ways, in terms of my engagement with him on our board, in terms of his deep commitment to service to the city, in terms of his expansive desire to move the needle on questions of civil discourse, and his ability in many ways to find time in the midst of a very busy schedule running a top 500 company, top 10 company, to come to this campus and to be invested in the future of our students. He comes to you tonight with a very special message. Now, last year I promised you when Peter Lydon spoke that he was not going to leave a brick intact in this building. And I was right. We got the bill from public safety. I'm kidding. Peter Lydon took this place down brick by brick and refused to put it back together. I wish I could tell you tonight that Ozzie was going to rebuild the House of Ruth. I'm about to tell you that tonight Ozzy's about to take this building down again, brick by brick, and we will all be edified by his message. Please join me in welcoming my friend, the dynamic, the wonderful Ozzy Nelson. Thank you.
Logistics. Thank you, Yahuro. It's always so hard to follow him in anything that I do. It is great to be here this evening. I'm going to be talking about experiences, and fair to say that many of my fondest experiences have been at this campus. So it's always a great pleasure, whether it's to be with my fellow advisory board members or to be on the campus for any reason. It's always very special to come back. I would say that this talk turned out to be a little bit more of a journey than I anticipated, and I started out really wanting to talk about the future and how different the future is going to be from all the other experiences that we have to date. And then I thought, when we start to point out our differences, we deny our humanity. And so I changed the talk to really talk about some cool things that are going to be, that are happening today and are happening in the future. But really, they are just the latest manifestation of humanity in a very different time and in a time in which we have much more technological abilities and a lot of social change. I will not only talk about the future, giving you a little bit of a preview. I will make an impassioned plea for how the future is not all that far in the future. And one of the things that is really the characteristic of any time in which humanity has lived is we all have the opportunity to shape the future. So, if that all sounds good, please stay seated, because that's what we're going to cover. So we in fact live in very changing times. We are going from a time of practicality to choice, from a time of necessity to preference. And the best example I can give about that is that two generations ago, my father tells the story of shoveling coal into the furnace to keep the house warm. Today, we not only have a thermostat, many of us have a cell phone, and we set the temperature in the house from the cell phone so that we can have it cool when we're not there and warm when we are. That's going from this deep sense of necessity and having to keep our eye on all of these practical things to having much more choice and preference. We are clearly on a global scale going from a closed society to an open society. And we see these societal and institutional barriers coming down, and that means that people have an ability to express themselves perhaps in a different way than any other time in which there has been humanity on Earth. And finally, we're moving from a time in which we started with a very traditional view or historic view of anything that we did, and now because of how much new capability there is and how much innovation there is, yes, we take best practice with us, but we are much more focused on the future and future capabilities when we do almost anything. So I'm going to start out by talking about the millennials. And the millennials are important because in a slide coming up, you'll see that the millennials now are the main cohort from a spending perspective. And I should have started by saying that what I'm going to share with you today, a lot of this comes from the work that my firm does with major brands, with corporate workplace, with environmental design. But we, in order to design, work a lot with research, particularly on consumer brands and on human behavior. So I'll be sharing any of these statistics that I'm sharing with you as the basis of that work. So 72% of millennials would increase their spending on experiences rather than physical things. I think one of the things that this sea change is two generations ago or three generations ago, people were, for the first time, wrapped up in being able to own their own products, their own color television, their own product, if you will. But the difference is, because products have become so obsolete, that people really started to center on, how do I get the same experience, kind of forget the product. That's why you see fewer people owning cars today and Ubering. It's not about owning a car, it's about getting to the experience. And you can think about all of these places where people are substituting owning a product with just a way to get to the experience. Here's another great statistic about the value that people put in experiences, but particularly the millennials. So let's talk about what's driving that shift a little bit. So as I said, the millennials are the biggest cohort. There is a lot of empirical data about this strong link between experiences making a fundamental difference in people's attitude and general happiness as opposed to amassing goods or products. We live in an age of likes. Likes are our currency in social media. And I will, through this talk, I will resist the temptation. In fact, I will take us back a lot to say that may be the way that we express ourselves today, but that really isn't any different than what people have done over the ages. So likes are the, think of them as a social media equivalent of applause or a laugh when you tell a joke. It's affirmation. But we live in a world in which social media is coming at us all the time in so many ways that you get as many, you know, you get hundreds of likes potentially in a day, where in an audience like this, you're lucky at the end if you get an applause. So it's the repetition with which we get likes that is the intensity. And then there's FOMO, fear of missing out. Because we're not only seeing these experiences all the time, we're seeing the things that we weren't either invited to or chose not to go to. So people now have this mindset of, not only am I gonna have fun at this experience, but if I don't go to the experience, am I gonna regret that I didn't go? So let's go back to humanity. All the technology and all the tools doesn't change the basic humanity within us. And what I'm gonna talk about is five elements that I think have been a part of humanity from the time that we were in the cave to the way that we will act 100 years from now. We'll just live in a different time. They are engagement, building and wanting to have a sense of community, self-expression, immersion, and the pursuit of knowledge and to understand and be understood. So engagement is one of the most basic. Everybody wants to get picked in class. Everybody wants to be engaged in a conversation. Engagement is pretty basic to who we are. Turn that into consumer language. People are 72% more likely to buy a product if they have been engaged in some way with that product before the buying decision. So we're starting to put this science of engagement into consumer products, into everything that we do, and look for that trend in all of this and in your lives as we go forward, as you go forward. So engagement, if you think about the earliest forms of engagement, people watched parades, they went to plays, they were part of an audience of some sort. And now, even one way, what has traditionally been one-way communication is becoming two-way communication. Starting with American Idol up there, and the statistic there that half of the users of TV are hashtagging and interacting and voting on TV. So the expectation in a highly technical world is that there's a lot of two-way engagement while you're watching the main event. Two examples, one on the upper right and then in the middle, are two examples from corporate workplace. Upper right is Oracle. And in some of the facilities that we've designed for Oracle. There are these interactive walls where people can touch buttons and the buttons change color. And they basically are sort of setting the environment that they're going to be in. The middle is Google, where when you play chess, you really play chess. So you move those pieces around in a human-sized chessboard. To the lower left, sorry, I'm struggling with this, how close this should be, is the American Girl. So Mattel came to our firm a number of years ago and was very focused on the fact that the audience of the American Girl had changed, and they wanted to talk about the tangible ways that that had happened and what that meant for how they should market the American Girl. So we did this study on girls aged 7 to 12, and the research was that younger consumers are no different than older consumers in this environment, in which they don't just want to go pick anybody's doll. They want a doll that's very much in line with what they think the doll should be. So the first part of buying an American Girl is you pick the skin color, the hair color, the eyes, the cheekbones, and you construct your own American Girl. By the way, a great lesson in terms of diversity and training at a very early age, that you know, people and dolls look like all kinds of things. But the kicker is, once you buy your American Girl, now you go to an American Girl store where you don't buy the American Girl, you have experiences. So the site that's up there is in Rockefeller Center, and that's where you go and have a very expensive tea with your American Girl. You get your nails painted with your American Girl, but you have all kinds of experiences. And then the final one is Levi's. So the firm works with Levi's to really transform what the Levi's shopping experience is like. So you don't go to the Levi's store to buy Levi's. You go to the Levi's store to see the capabilities that Levi's has. What are the thread colors? What are the button types? What are the pre-washed or stone-washed capabilities and different patterns? And then finally, in a world in which everybody buys new jeans that are ripped, you actually identify the kinds of rips and where you want the tears in your jeans. And then you either have the jeans shipped to you at home or back at the store and you pick them up there. So the most basic products, like blue jeans, are all about engagement. I'm going to give you a little preview of that video. So if you talk about engagement in the new world, it's about human engagement, it's about environmental engagement, and this is a T-Mobile store that opened in the Miracle Mile in Chicago, and the opening of the store is this video. So the next thing that I'd like to talk about in this whole idea of engagement is how education is changing in engagement. And I think, there we go. What Benjamin Franklin said 200 years ago, people are just rediscovering today. If you think about it, there have always been educational institutions, but there also has been an apprenticeship that craftsmen went through in order to physically do the trade that they were in. And so this quote from Benjamin Franklin talking about involve me and I learn is really what I think we're rediscovering in education. So this is a STEM center, a STEAM center. I know that the university is looking very closely at building a STEAM center. And the bottom line is that STEAM is science, technology, engineering, arts, math. Some of these are now STEAM-D, where there's a D for design. But it's all about taking the particulars of any one discipline, but immersing it into a much broader audience and other ways of learning so that artists can learn from engineers, who can learn from mathematicians, because engagement is not only a one-way trait, as I said, it's becoming much more interdisciplinary. And an example I love, for most of you that know the story, Steve Jobs took a calligraphy course in college and forever changed the way that he would or anybody else would look at a computer again. So that's the kind of change that I think we're going to continue to see in engagement. Seeking a sense of belonging and community. Love this slide because while it's a bunch of young people today, it could be cavemen, it could be anybody from any point in all of humanity, and it talks about our desire to be connected and to build community. So the photos here on the upper left with the societal walls coming down, we are not only seeing subsets of communities that are being created, but we are seeing a broader acceptance of a variety of those communities in our broader community. So much more human expression and an ability to express ourselves within a community that is open to that. One of the big trends that's happening with brands today is that if you look at a lot of the advertising, it's about building a sense of community, not necessarily going into the spec on why that product is the best. Lululemon, upper right, is a good example of that. Lululemon embraces the idea of the fitness community, and in all of their stores, they have yoga classes, and they create this virtual community where people come in and identify with the product in the store in a completely different way because Lululemon becomes a part of their community. Lower left, the Reds Hall of Fame, which we just completed in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I think a really good example of how sports is becoming a community. Not only did we do the Reds Stadium or Reds Hall of Fame, we just finished 2 years ago a development called The Battery, which is the mixed use around the Braves Stadium in Atlanta. Hotels, housing, retail, the Braves are a community, very much like what the Vikings are doing in Eagan. And as I was thinking about this yesterday, I went to the Vikings game, and I had the Vikings app on because I was going to scan my tickets. And when we pulled up to the stadium in the light rail, my pocket binged, and I picked up my phone, and it was the Vikings welcoming me to the stadium. So this sense of community is physical, it's virtual, and it is going to continue. The wristbands are Disney wristbands. So imagine that you're a child who likes Disney, you have your Disney app, you're always talking with the Disney characters. When you go to the theme park, you get one of these wristbands. And the wristband carries every conversation that you've had on the app in every way that you interact in the park. So there's automated robots that look like characters that will talk to you and pick up the conversation from 3 days ago. When your food is delivered, they know your name and anything you've told them about the kind of food that you like. So this sense of community, again, is virtual. It's human in terms of the Lululemon example. But I think this growing sense of community is going to be something that's going to increasingly be important. Self-expression from the caveman. Self-expression in terms of both telling a story and expressing our artistic inner self has clearly been a part of who we are. By the way, there will be, and Jennifer, I don't know how we'll do it, but there's a link that will, if you go to creativefuelblog.com, you'll find this presentation, and you'll also find a series of links to a lot of the pictures that are up here, so that you can go in and get a lot more detail about it for those interested. We'll also put a link on there about Osmond Art. So most of you hopefully probably know St. Thomas has the largest collection of Osmond art in the world. And when I look at this art, it's not only beautiful in terms of the workmanship, every one of these pieces tells a story. So let's talk about some consumer brand examples of self-expression. So upper left is a new retailer called Giant Monster. They sell apparel. And what's interesting is when you go into the store, you don't see racks of apparel, like sunglasses is one of the things that they sell. You go into a gallery that feels like an art gallery that is custom designed for any community that they're in, as a way to entice people to come in and live in an environment that is very much about what their matches their sense of self-expression. The middle picture on the top is Google again. Those Google facilities are filled with ways for people to express themselves in all kinds of ways. Fluid, upper left. I'm looking here and over my shoulder, upper left. Fluid opened 2 years ago in New York. It is the first gender-neutral apparel store. Middle bottom is CoverGirl, new store in Manhattan, in which this is not about picking makeup. It's about a beauty playground in which people go in and find their beauty in all kinds of ways, through different mirrors and abilities to see themselves in different ways. And then to the right, Oracle again. One of the things that Oracle does is they customize all of their workplace to the location that they're in. So that's San Francisco. I'm sorry, that's Seattle. A big celebration of the music community there. And so that's a three-story Jimi Hendrix that is the artwork when you come down the stairs. Next, we're going to talk about immersion. And I purposely have picked slides from different eras so that, again, you can see it's not humanity that has changed, it's the capabilities that have changed. And so immersion is experiencing things through multiple senses. And even though these are black and white pictures, maybe it's me, I mean, you can smell that environment. You can hear the drama in that environment from ancient times and the gladiators. Here's another one where you can smell the peanuts and probably the elephants and the sense of sound. So when we go to a rock concert today, it's really no different than what people have been doing. I'm sorry, what people have been doing for 2,000 years. It's just taking advantage of technology to manifest a new environment. So here are some examples of immersion. Upper left, artificial intelligence, the Google Glasses. And while that is primarily a visual experience, they now, through artificial intelligence, are getting so that when you reach out to touch something, you'll actually be able to feel it. So the immersive experience of artificial intelligence is going to continue to grow. In the bottom left, this is a new store that we just finished in Times Square for Hershey. And the best way, apparently, to sell Hershey's chocolate is to go in the back of the store in a camper where you make your own s'mores on Times Square. It's pretty cool. The center is a new facility, I'll call it, or service, called the Dreamery, where you can buy a dream. You can buy a nap. So you pick the bedding you want, the pillows you want, the temperature you want, and you sign up for like 45 minutes and go and take a nap. And then I think one of the ones that's really the coolest, so the lower right there is a tube stop in London where Hendrik Jin put wallpaper floor to ceiling. The graphic is the iconic Hendrik graphics, and it's scented wallpaper. And the scent are the main elements that go into making gin. So you are pretty buzzed by the time you walk through the, I think is the point here. So immersion, we're gonna show you this video, which is, this is a Jaguar sponsored event at Wimbledon where everybody has biometric bracelets on and there are biometric sensors to see when people are in their seats and not. So not only do you have the traditional experience of being in a crowd, it is dialed up exponentially because everybody's heart rate and everybody's energy is going through this biometric loop, and that's what you're experiencing when you're watching the game.
Cool, calm and collected, but how will she be in this passionate atmosphere of a Wimbledon final?
Wimbledon. The greatest Grand Slam. A unique atmosphere where feelings run strong. Where to be in the crowd is to be part of the match. And now, for the first time, all those who love the game can experience the emotion as it happens. Because Jaguar is capturing these feelings and bringing them to you wherever you are. Spectators are wearing technology that captures every beat of their hearts. Sensors in the grounds track the energy of the crowd. And as fans get fired up around the world, we're there to see exactly what's trending. This is how we measure emotion, so you can feel the thrill, the heartbreak, and the glory. This year, you'll feel Wimbledon like never before.
Next, I'm going to talk a little bit about knowledge, the thirst for knowledge, and both understanding in terms of our environment, but just as importantly, being understood. So, upper left, just a Google query, sorry, nothing really exotic. By the way, my wife always says, when we're disagreeing about when something happened that is factual, she'll say, well, the good news is we don't have to fight about that anymore, but we will Google it. But going with this whole idea of how readily available data is, go to the lower right, and Daniel Pink, more than a decade ago, wrote a book called A Whole New Mind, which really talked about the fact that we've gone from valuing minds that can hold a lot of data to minds that can take data and quickly analyze it. If you think about the people that were really important to the boss in the past, it was the person that could tell him where all the sites were, where all the data was. Now he can look that up. What he needs is somebody that can put together a strategy of how he's going to maximize all that data. So in this thirst for knowledge, it's no longer about amassing all of this data. It's what we do with the data in order to analyze life and everything that we do. Amazon Go, I don't know if they have Amazon Go's here, but RFID technology, so when you walk in the store, it knows who you are. And so you walk in, you grab a sandwich, and you walk out. I think that promotes this idea that these environments are understanding us and what we want. We want a sandwich. We don't want to wait in line. And so when you get that kind of understanding through a consumer brand or a consumer opportunity, I think you will be drawn to it. Look familiar? One of the things I hate the most, I have to say, is when you will see four young people like this on their phones together, and someone will make an observation about what the future is going to be like. That somehow there's a lack of connection between those four people, that somehow the world in the future will be more impersonal, that technology will take over our humanity. I hate that picture as much as you do, obviously. But it's a reminder that if there's evil in the future, there's a heck of a lot of evil that's in our past. And when did the evil happen? It happened when we denied our humanity. It came when we pronounced our differences more than our similarities. It came when people were not allowed to express their opinions and their voice. And it came when, even when they had that chance, they were silent in the face of evil. I don't see that in the future. What I see is more voice for people and people using their voice. 64% of people will switch products, will boycott, even if it's a great product. If they think that the manufacturer is doing something wrong, they won't use the product. Obviously going to play a video and I missed the cue. This is, I think, a very touching video. I think it's an example of how technology can really empower us to be much more empathetic, to express our humanity in ways that we couldn't, and that even consumer brands are learning that it's about connecting with people in completely new ways.
I'm Shar Day, and in a couple months, I'm going to be a mom. I'm very excited. I'm nervous, especially because it's twins. You know, having one is one, and then having two, they say, is like 20. I'm married to my high school sweetheart, Jake. We started dating when we were 15. We always wanted a family. I did always imagine that I would be pregnant, you know, experiencing the kicks and morning sickness or the different food cravings, but that didn't happen. I am a 5-year cancer survivor. Medically, I knew that it was impossible to carry my own child. My future is uncertain. I have no choice but to fight.
As a woman, as a mom, I understand what it's like to want to have that complete life.
Our surrogate is Antoinette.
My name is Antoinette, and I'm a surrogate mother.
To feel them and have them, you know, move inside of me and to feel a kick. That's something that I'll never be able to experience.
I think she's missing that whole connection that every mother has with their pregnancy.
Genetically, they're mine, but I want that, you know, mother-daughter connection. I just can't wait. That was like a drum set.
They're going.
I look down. I'm not pregnant, but I know that two girls are coming. They're my girls. They're our girls.
So Huggies not just selling diapers, they're selling experiences. They're empowering empathy in a way that in a non-technical world we'd be unable to. One of the statistics about immersion is they say that if people only read something, they're likely to remember 10% of the message. If they hear something, they're likely to remember 20%. If they see something, they're likely to remember 30%. But if they see and hear something, they're likely to remember 50% of that message. So while we do need heads down time, and we do need to grasp the material, I think we're headed into a world in which the way that we make a difference in the world is not by bringing up walls and trying to bring the cattle chutes back and telling people what they should do. It's about engaging people in all entirely new ways, using technology, but also being there to share experiences. And quite frankly, I think this goes both ways. I think if you want to know in my house how to fix the remote or work the cell phone, I ask my 16-year-old son. So those learning lessons, not only do we have, is there something to impart to younger people? I think younger people have a way and have a bigger and bigger role in helping an older generation to be more relevant in changing times. I want to close by talking about the fact that I started by saying, we all have an opportunity to shape the future. What Bobby Kennedy said over 50 years ago, I think still is true today. And it's not only the ripple in the pond that makes an impact, it's the lack of the ripple. The silence makes just as much of an effect of continuing the inertia in the world as making a mark or dropping a pebble. And these don't have to be big things. These are pebbles that are small things and big things. And as I thought about this talk 2 weeks ago, and I had most of the material prepared, I wanted some way to impart that not only do we have this opportunity to shape the world, but we don't have forever to do it. That there is a timeliness here in terms of our time here on the earth. And I got a LinkedIn invitation from the wife of a friend of mine, who was one of my best friends when I was here at St. Thomas, by the name of Mark Roush. And his wife Joan and I ended up connecting on the phone, and Joan said, I just wanted to tell you, because obviously you didn't know, Mark actually passed away 3 years ago. And Mark was one of those forever young kind of characters, blonde, shaggy hair in Ireland Hall, in what feels like yesterday. And we, as I processed that, which was hard to think about, Joan talked about how she comes back to the campus quite a bit because her daughter Ellen is a freshman. And I thought, you know, there's just not enough coincidences, or there's too many coincidences in life for me to be talking here to you and my friend from freshman year having passed away, and a whole new generation is here at St. Thomas. So my guest tonight is Joan and Ellen. Ellen, would you please stand? Ellen is from one of the most important trickles in the water that Mark and Joan would decide to have in life. And if you sum this up, we're all about the common good. this institution not only trains people in disciplines and in education, but it prepares people to be global citizens of the world and to be stewards of our future. I had the opportunity tonight to spend the evening with our future. And I would leave you tonight to tell you that we are in incredibly good hands. Thank you all. God bless you.
For Ozzy, if anyone has any questions. Any questions? I was going to do my Oprah thing and run, but I got my steps for today. I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. Again, it was a pleasure to hear Ozzy speak. I think part of what we hope to do in convening the college is create a space for us to come together as a community to celebrate not only what is the essence of who we are as an institution of higher learning, but opportunities for us to think concretely about what the future looks like. I think Ozzy did that for us this year in the same way that Peter challenged us last year. We'll continue that challenge next year. Thank all of you. Have a wonderful evening. And don't forget Teach-In Tuesday in 2 weeks. So we'll see you soon. Take care.